Put the soda down.
I'm thirsty.
It's not good for you.
It's Coca-Cola. It's America's favorite drink, doctor.
You're advertising for Coke.
I think it's gone.
Yeah, it's gone.
I think I said. What are you complaining about? That's a real Coke. That's a real Coke. You gave me a big hard time a couple of years ago about drinking diet drinks. You said don't drink those. Dangerous. They'll kill you.
Well, we'll go into that probably later on in the show. But yeah, let's talk about Coke. What happens when you drink a Coke?
Dr. Mensing, what happens when you drink a Coke? Is it different from when I drink a Dr. Pepper?
Well, let's put it this way. All sodas, you can categorize them into diet and non-diet. Mm-hmm. All sodas, except some things like ginger ale, things like that. But most sodas, especially the colas, they're essentially the same thing except different flavorings.
Right, right.
One is no better than the other kind of thing. That's the first thing. When you take within 10 minutes of drinking an 8-ounce soda, all right, that's not very long. Essentially, you have drank 10 teaspoons of sugar. If you took 10 teaspoons of sugar and ate it, all right.
Sounds delicious.
You'd vomit your guts out.
Really?
It's true. But because that sugar is buffered with a phosphoric acid solution, which is really what soda is, essentially it blunts the vomiting so you don't vomit. All right. So 10 minutes, within 10 minutes, you have pushed in your body 10 teaspoons of sugar. That's a lot of sugar, Jeff. A lot of sugar. And think of it. One teaspoon, just one teaspoon of sugar.
How many teaspoons of sugar in a slice of cake?
Probably about 15, 20, something like that, if I remember right.
15, 20. It's
been ages since I've looked at that, but a lot.
Wow.
A lot. After 20 minutes, all the sugar raises your insulin levels. And essentially, at 20 minutes, all that sugar, that massive impulse of sugar, it raises your insulin levels, which is not good for you. People who have hyperinsulinemia get heart disease and stroke and all that kind of stuff and metabolic syndrome. But more important than that, all that excess sugar within 20 minutes is converted into fat cells.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
I hear you.
Within 40 minutes, all right, you start to get the effects of the caffeine, all right? And you get this caffeine.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's in a caffeinated soda.
All caffeinated sodas. Some more than others, but most, there's probably, by the way, one of the highest caffeine-containing drinks around is Mountain Dew. A lot of people don't realize that.
I love Mountain
Dew. Yeah, Mountain Dew has one of the highest amounts of caffeine around. But you get this massive influx of caffeine. Your pupils dilate, your blood pressure rises, and you get... essentially, you get this outpouring of adenosine in your blood, and all of a sudden that makes you so you don't get drowsy. And that's what a lot of people use these things for, as a medicine, not to get drowsy.
Wasn't Pepsi-Cola originally marketed as a medicine, or Coca-Cola?
It was marketed as a tonic to help people, as like a medicine to help you get better. In fact, the original Coca-Cola, I mean, I don't know, 100 years ago kind of thing, had low levels of cocaine in it, all right?
Right?
And there's still some people that believe there's cocaine residues in it, all right? But who knows?
I really don't think so.
After 1 hour of drinking a Coke, Jazz, mm-hmm. essentially what happens is that the caffeine essentially triggers a certain receptors, dopamine receptors in the brain. And it gives you that feeling of pleasure and feeling of really relaxed and feeling good, all right? Those dopamine receptors. A lot of people don't realize those receptors are the same receptors that heroin works on.
Wow.
Yeah, all right? So you're getting you're getting that same jolt I don't know if a jolt is the right word, or that same effect, probably in a less amount, from a drink of Coke or any cola. I don't want to single out Coca-Cola kind of thing, but...
Yeah, but any Shasta,
a drink of
anything,
cola,
right?
Or caffeine-containing beverage, as you would with a heroin addict gets when he
takes a hit. Is there more caffeine in a cup of regular coffee or in an 8-ounce cola, do you think?
It depends how the coffee is made, but the average cup of coffee has between 6 and 8 milligrams of caffeine in it. A little bit less than some of the big heavy cola drinks.
Really? Wow, yes. I didn't know that.
Yeah. If you take after, here's the thing that gets a lot of people in trouble. After an hour after drinking a cola drink, all right? After 1 hour, essentially what happens, that phosphoric acid binds all the calcium, magnesium, and your zinc in the GI tract, and that gets absorbed into the GI tract as a sort of a push, and you get this lift from it, more energy, all right? And you literally lift. But after an hour... All right. What happens is you get the diuretic effect. You get start to pee it out. And two things happen. Number one, you end up diuresing or peeing out more water than it was in the original Coke. So anybody who tells you they're having a Coke to quench their thirst in a hot day doesn't know what they're talking about. Now, it does quench, you know, make you feel good, but it actually dehydrates you more. A lot of people don't realize that. The second thing is after an hour, about an hour and a 15 minutes, what happens is you start to diurese, and all this calcium, this zinc, and this magnesium are all flushed out. All right. Okay. Now, that does several things. Number one, it makes people have a lot low magnesium and zinc levels. All right. Number two, over the long term, it can help with osteoporosis. Okay. It takes years to do that, Jess. But the magnesium, if your magnesium levels are low, especially if you don't eat a lot of fresh salads, green leafy salads and things like that, literally two things happen. You start getting weak and tired from it. All right. Number two, if you drink a lot of sodas and you're pulling all the zinc out, you can't make his testosterone very good. And you can't get very good erections.
And your immune system must also
go down. And your immune system goes down.
Go down. Sure.
All right.
Yeah.
The other thing, when you're pouring out all this calcium into the urinary tract, essentially you're peeing it out, what happens is you make a fantastic substrate for kidney stones.
See, right? this is what I remember when I was a hardcore Mountain Dew drinker. I would probably go through 2 liters a day. Of Mountain
That's a
Dew.
Lot of Mountain Dew.
I love Mountain Dew. Not fountain Mountain Dew, but the stuff in the bottle. And actually, I wasn't drinking 2 liters. I was drinking, 16 ounce.
64 ounce.
Glass bottles. But I was drinking at least that much, you know.
That's a lot.
At least 6 liters, I suppose, a day. And I got kidney stones for the first time. And that is something. Chris, you ever had a kidney stone? You have? Okay, so you know what I'm talking about.
It was not
kidney
fun.
Stone. It is pain the worst.
It's worse than childbirth.
That's what I hear. It was certainly one of the most miserable things I've ever been through in my life. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the first things we tell people who have kidney stones is we stop your sodas, all sodas.
Right.
Because literally, you're pouring this phosphoric acid solution is leaching out all the calcium in your bones. And the other thing that's interesting, a lot of people don't realize, is that with sodas, all right, if you drink sodas, there is now studies that have come out, and there's just a few of them, but stroke increases and heart attack increases up to 48% on people who drink sodas.
Whoa. Now, can that be offset with baby aspirin?
No. Baby aspirin does something very interesting. One baby aspirin.
Yeah, 80 milligrams.
Changes, 81 milligrams changes the ability of your platelets, which are the clotting part of your blood, to change that clotting, the stickiness, actually, of the platelets for about 5 days. One baby aspirin.
Really? No, I take them every day.
You want to every day. But after age 55, we recommend that you take one baby aspirin every day.
Every day,
right? Okay. And that's really to make your platelets so they aren't sticky, so you have less chance of stroke and heart attack. Now, what happens when you have a heart attack? Think of a heart attack as literally that vessel gets a blockage, something happens that gets screwed up, all right? And make a long story short, it starts to clot, all right? And that clot is what causes a heart attack. And if you have less chance of building that clot because your platelets aren't as sticky, you don't get the heart attack as easy.
Wow. See, yeah.
And that's why the first thing you do when you have a heart attack or you call the paramedics, the first thing to do is they pop an aspirin and have you chew it.
Right.
All right?
Right.
Because that can very quickly change the ability of platelets to stick.
Because aspirin is a blood thinner.
That's correct.
And
just think of it,
a small amount.
One baby aspirin, Jess, that's nothing.
No,
right?
You can buy them at the dollar stores.
Yeah, one baby aspirin changes the ability of the blood to clot measurably for 5 days.
5 days, maybe.
5 days. People don't understand it. It is very powerful.
It cuts to what would you say the percentage of heart attacks that baby aspirin prevents? I've heard it's really high.
You
cut down your chances by something
Like 40%
or something, I think.
But what it does over the long term when you use these things, all right? Over the long term, what it does is it these are, how would I describe it? They're studies that it's not, you know, it changes the ability in, you know, maybe, you know, I'm guessing, you know, maybe 50 per 100,000 cases. It's not what you call, you know, half the time that if you take this, you won't have heart attacks. But it definitely makes a major difference. Major difference. Major difference.
Dr. Mensink with us this afternoon.
Hey, Doc, I've got a question about the baby aspirin. Is it better to take the chewable ones or just the
That's a good question.
I didn't hear that, Jess.
Is it better to take the chewable baby aspirins or just the ones you swallow?
It doesn't really matter. All right, it doesn't really matter.
Doesn't matter one way or
doesn't
another.
Doesn't matter.
Do you get your baby aspirin chewable?
No, I haven't. I just thought about that, and I was wondering if
I don't think it makes a difference.
I would imagine it's the same thing.
Essentially, it's not really absorbed very well sublingually, from what I understand. So I don't think it'll make really any difference.
I have a bottle. I buy every couple of maybe every month or month and a half. I buy a bottle at the Dollar Tree or a 99-cent store, and every night when I put together the massive mound of pills that I take every morning together.
There's one little pink baby aspirin in there.
I
tell people, you don't have to have your doctor tell you this. And especially if you smoke, by the way. If you smoke or if you have a history of premature cardiac death in your family, grandfather, father had heart bypasses in their 40s or 50s. Those are the people that need to go on aspirin right away, kind of thing.
Exactly.
And it's cheap and safe and works.
Yeah, exactly.
There's very little troubles with it, really.
It's preventable.
Preventable medicine.
Preventable medicine.
KNZR, Bakersfield's talk radio leader. You're listening to Jazz McKay on KNZR.
What about diet sodas? I know you went on a rampage. You were just crazy, man.
I am not a fan of diet sodas.
A couple of years ago. So what is it about diet sodas? I'm
going to read this because it's just – but all diet sodas, they have – all light diet colas, all right? They have several things. The first thing is called acrocarbonated sparkling water. But this does several things. This is the first ingredient. It increases the acidity of your gastric juices, so you have more trouble with reflux and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Here's the interesting thing. It increases flatulency, makes you pass gas more. A lot of people don't realize
that.
All right. The other is ED-150D food coloring, all right? But what's interesting about this, they have to add ammonium sulfate to it. And when it does that with specific temperatures, especially warm temperatures, it literally can become a poison. Whereas cold, it's not so much. All right? There's something called E952, and it's really sodium cyclamate. And it's a sugar substitute. It has a sweet taste. It's 200 times more sweeter than sugar. But here's the thing. In 69, it was banned by the FDA, as well as we banned saccharin and aspartame at the time. Because it caused cancer in rats' bladders. And it's been, since 75, it's prohibited in Japan, South Korea. But what's interesting, in 1979, the World Health Organization, and nobody knows really why, all of a sudden changed its designation and said it was no longer bad and it was safe. There's aspartame in these sodas. There's something called orthophosphoric acid. And this is essentially what it does. They use it for refractory materials for making glass and ceramics and stuff like that, and fertilizer, by the way. But it's known to interfere with absorption of iron and calcium. So I want you to think, you've got this phosphoric acid solution you're drinking. Mm-hmm. You're also taking this other orthophosphoric acid that makes it so you can't absorb as much iron, but also as much calcium. And you're making the body pee out all this excess calcium and magnesium and zinc. It's devastating, worse than non-diet sodas.
I think one of the things that would scare me the most about any kind of soda, diet or non-diet, is the fact that we used to use Coca-Cola or whatever cola to remove rust.
Oh, sure, it works wonderful.
From a rusty old bumper when working on our cars when we were kids.
And it's very good for polishing chrome.
Yeah.
Did you know that if you take you can take just a regular nail, all right, maybe a 22D nail, put it in a glass of Coke, watch it overnight, and overnight the nail would be rusted and gone.
Yeah.
The other thing that a lot of people don't know about, but most of these drinks have sodium benzoate in it. And that's a very common, by the way. But several things are important. Many asthmatics are allergic or have reactions to sodium benzoate. especially if you're allergic to aspirin. And the other thing, this is important, if you two things are linked to the sodium benzoate, and if you look and start looking on your food labels, it's on it's in everything kind of thing. This tooth, they're linked. It's linked to cirrhosis and Parkinson's disease.
No way.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
No way.
Yes. All right.
To cirrhosis?
Cirrhosis and Parkinson's disease. Very interesting. Now, the
answer is for sure that's going to end up,
it's too early to say for sure, but there's definite lab relations.
Links, okay. Links. But not,
the studies have shown the cirrhosis of Parkinson's.
Now, what's it called again?
It's called sodium benzoate. It's
sodium benzoate. Like you said.
It's in everything. I mean, look at it.
Isn't that like a salt substitute kind of a thing?
As a reduced salt, that you could think of it that way.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. I look at that and I look at that. Why would you want to drink a soda?
Because it tastes good.
Because it tastes good. You're right.
Well, let me ask you. Okay, all right. Things. Now, what about things like, non-carbonated things like the lemonades, Minute Maid lemonade,
sure.
For instance?
Several things. No, not at all. Several things. As long as you have, there's lots of carbon. Non-carbonated drinks out there. The several things you have to watch for them. Number one is make sure the sugar content or the artificial sugar content. You know what I mean? A lot of them have fructose, high-dose fructase things in it. The second thing you have to really watch, I'm not a fan, if you do it, you use it very seldom, but are the energy drinks and things like that, because they're very high taurine compounds.
Are you listening, Chris?
And if you do use a lot of them, you can get in trouble with those.
Yeah, see, he's into those energy drinks.
Yeah. No, it's if you drink a lot of energy drinks, what I encourage you to do is stop them for about 2 weeks. And if you feel wiped out, you're flagging it sort of a dead, like
you know what
a dead
I
horse.
Say.
You need to see your doctor.
I see. If you're into energy drinks, here's the deal. If you've got to have an energy drink, why not go back to the original energy drink, a cup of coffee?
Yeah. As long as you don't drink too many.
No.
By the way, one cup of coffee is actually good for you, all right?
I drink about a half to one cup a day off and on. I don't even do it every day.
Yeah, there's no evidence that suggests coffee is good for you.
And as well as should. Yeah. There's a lot of things I can think of with coffee that would be good for you. But, you know, the other day I was over at Food, whatever it is, Max for Less, whatever. I can never remember what it's called. Anyway.
The grocery store.
And I got this sounded good. It was a blackberry sort of a soda thing, flavored with real blackberries, not artificial flavors or anything like that. And I think it has natural sugar in it. Anyway, so I got that and it's got little caffeine and it's, maybe about 8 ounces, I guess, maybe 10. Is that the same as it's carbonated,
no,
but
that's not the same as soda.
Not the same as soda.
Not at all.
What is better for you? Natural cane sugar, which is all the big rage now with sodas.
You can buy Cokes in the old bottles with the cane
sugar or corn syrup.
I don't know.
Which is worse?
Let me put it this way. I'll tell you my personal preference. I don't know that I have any literature to back this up, but I think I would rather go to a cane sugar of least of both evils than using a corn syrup, only because of several things. Number one is that most of the corn syrup is actually GMO corn. And we don't know enough about GMO corn. No.
Okay, so you're not on that anti-GMO bandwagon, but...
No, but I think... How I look at GMOs, Jez, I don't think the jury's not out yet.
Okay.
It's not finished. It's not being proven. There's a lot of evidence for it, okay? And I think that it's smarter if you can do it and is to avoid them for now. I'm a big fan that we should have labeling, all right, because I think it's good for people to know.
No, I agree.
I agree with that. I don't think the evidence is not out there to say it's all bad, all right, or good or safe. The jury's not done. I think the next five years we'll know
that.
I think that's the only thing I look at so far as that. I don't personally think that even the cane sugar sodas are good because you have this high sugar load.
No,
you have all the other things that we talked about.
Between the two, the choice of the two, that seems to be where everybody's going. I personally think they ruin Sierra Mist. I like the old Sierra Mist with the cane sugar. I'm sorry, it doesn't have the same flavor. I thought that was the most delicious soda I've ever tasted.
There's a lot of the, I think, at least for me, every once in a while I see these old bottles from Mexico with cane sugar, the old Coke sale. And you buy it for nostalgia kind of thing,
But they're tasty in the glass. I mean, the glass bottle, which is better for you? Glass bottle's plastic.
I don't think. As long as you don't use have BPH in your plastic, I don't think it makes a difference.
Okay, it doesn't make a difference. Yeah. 1560 AM, 97.7 FM, KNZR. Dr. Mensink with us this afternoon on KNZR. Doc, is your headphones working?
Yeah, it's working.
You got it okay?
Just changed them.
All right, let's go to John. John, how are you, bud?
John, I'm here, I guess.
Yes, that would
talking
be
me?
That
no.
would be you. Hello, John, are you there?
All right.
Wait a minute. Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Okay.
I eat a good, balanced diet. I eat no soft drinks, but I do drink a six-pack, if not more, of beer a day. How does that compare with
soda, yeah, that's a good one.
John, probably the biggest question thing to tell you, I don't know the answer to your question, which is worse kind of thing for you. My suspicion, the alcohol in the long run is worse. The question that I have, John, for you, our recommendations and the CDC's recommendations too, same thing, is no more than one drink a day. I have all the yeah. young guys come in and say, oh, I'd only drink a six pack a week. It's all on Saturday. That doesn't count. But here's the bigger question, John, that I have. If you came to see me, here's what I would question you. Number one, there's two things that have to be looked at. Number one is that most people who are drink heavily, all right, you need to see why they're drinking, all right? And probably the most common is that they have an underlying depression and serotonin problem, okay? And they're covering them up. Number two, I don't care that you drink. I don't quite mean it that way, but that's not the real issue to me. What I tell my patients, you need to stop for 3 months, totally, not a sip. And here's why. Two reasons. Number one, I need to know that you control it, John, versus it control you. And the pathology of alcoholism, all alcoholics are liars, all right? And I tell patients, I don't care if you lie to me. I'll figure it out. I've been around a long time, and it'll come up.
Well, people are liars.
The part of the pathology of alcoholism, actually, they become liars about their alcohol. That's part of the pathology of alcoholism.
Sure.
It's totally different than just a person who becomes a liar. But more important, they lie to themselves. Oh, I can control it. I can stop anytime I want and all that. What you have to do is you have to stop for 3 months to see that you control it, it doesn't control you. Because if it does, if you can't do that, we need to get you help. That's the first thing. Number two, I want you to stop because I want to see what the real you's like if you come to see me as a patient to treat the underlying cause. Because if I don't treat the underlying cause of why you're drinking, I won't cure your alcoholism. End of discussion kind of thing, all right? And that's hard for patients to understand, all right? And a lot of patients, I mean, they're afraid to quit drinking because they're going to fall apart. All right. Mm. And they know it. All right. And, it's hard for them to understand that I want to see them fall apart. I mean, because I can't diagnose what the real problem is underlying until I see that.
You can't. Well, this is the old saying, you can't really fix the alcoholic Let me put it this way. The alcoholic can't fix himself until he hits rock bottom, right?
That is true, by the way, Jazz. And rock bottom is different for everybody, by the way. But, yeah, that's very true.
You could be lying in the gutter. Lost everything. It could be in a hospital undergoing, a liver transplant or kidney transplant or on dialysis with a kidney dialysis machine. There may be many different rock bottoms for different people.
Yeah, no, that's very true what you say. I don't know if I have answered your question, John, but that's kind of how I look at those things.
Yeah, it's really up to you, John, as to if what I say, Doc, it depends on if it is it's having a negative effect in your life. Psychological negative effects. So for instance, not just health wise, but you should obviously have your liver checked, have your kidneys checked, and the rest of your guts, the rest of your innards. But if that's all fine and it's not affecting your life, your wife.
Here's the problem with that, Jazz. We know that there's very good evidence for it. This is very true. I can have you drink one drink of alcohol, just mm-hmm. one drink, mm-hmm. and I can measure your before that drink, and after that drink, and I can see the liver changes.
Really?
Just one drink. All right? So that becomes a sort of a fallacy of an argument, because one drink will do it. Now, those liver enzyme raises are not very much, but anybody who says, I drink and it doesn't bother my liver, really doesn't know what they're talking about, because one drink will change your SBGGPs. Just not very much.
Let's get David on with us. Dave, welcome to the Jazz McKay Show. Brother, how are you?
All right, Jazz. How are you doing?
Good.
I've got a question for you, Doctor. I wanted to get your take on statin drugs prescribed to lower cholesterol levels. I've read some literature from some pathologists and cardiologists that say that the statin drugs really starve the brain of cholesterol, and they're one of the main reasons why we have increase in Alzheimer's disease, and I wanted to get your take on what you thought of this.
Oh, that's a massive topic, by the way. Dave, let's talk real quickly about statins. First of all, the first thing you need to know is if you're on statins, all right, you need to take coenzyme Q10, because all the statins deplete your coenzyme Q10 and bad things happen down the road. That's the first thing, all right? Number two, okay. It depends. You have to understand the pathology of why they're giving statins and what the issues are. First of all, and this is hard for patients to understand, there is no, in fact, zero evidence that elevated cholesterols cause health problems. Listen to what I said. It is not the cholesterol, but it is a certain fraction of the cholesterol that gets sort of, think of it like getting irritated or inflamed. Inflamed might be a better word. That's what causes your atherosclerotic heart disease and all these other issues, all right? So the bigger issue, I am less interested in your cholesterol than I am about how inflamed your vessels are, or the cholesterol is activated or inflamed. And a lot of doctors use a CMP, or there's other tests to check for that that are give a better picture. The second thing, I don't use a lot of statins, and I'm not a fan of them, and I'll tell you why. If you optimize thyroid, and I'm I believe in optimizing thyroid to the top quarter of normal, not the bottom three quarters, several things happen. Number one, patients lose weight, all right? Their immune system gets up and they feel good. But another side effect from that, 90% of the people that are on statins, if you optimize the thyroid, they don't need their statin, and their cholesterol comes down to normal, and it's safer, all right? The last thing, David, about statins, and I see this a lot, and we in the office, we're very aggressive with watching these people, and if you're not too careful, we see people who their cholesterol levels will get too low, and the studies have shown that if you have a cholesterol less than 140, 130 to 140, actually the risk for heart disease goes up, not down, all right? So you have to be careful you don't get overtreated, all right? But it depends on the philosophy of a doctor, all right? The statins have been pushed a lot, and there's a lot of value to them. I look at, for my practice, I would rather treat some of these other things than so that the cholesterol comes down lower. I look at the real place statins are needed is if I do that, say, to you, and your cholesterol, like I had a patient this morning that came in, and everything's been optimized, but he's got a cholesterol up in the sky, but more than that, he's got his triglycerides up in almost 1,000. You know, and there's nothing, no change to anything else that we've tried. This is a patient that has a familial problem with his genes. He's got a gene defect. And he needs to be treated with a statin, but also with some other medicine for the triglycerides. But those people with gene defects definitely need to have statins. You cannot live without them. Bad things are going to happen. I personally think they're used a little bit too much. But if you're not going to do the way I tell you, then or the way we do it in our office and some doctors do, then you have to use the statins. All right?
Gotcha.
That's a different philosophy.
David, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. I got some questions for you real quick, all right? I was reading an article about the CDC and the top 15 causes of death. I was actually looking at this to see where gun violence falls in, and it doesn't even crack.
No, by the way, it's not even in the top 20, if I remember.
You can crack the top 20. Okay, number one's heart disease, malignant neoplasms, that would be cancer, right?
Yep.
Is number two. Number three, chronic lower respiratory disease. I know what that is. Accidents, I know what that is. What is number five? Cerebrovascular disease.
What that means is that you have problems with the brain where the vessels of the brain are screwed up, and either you stroke or you have clots or you bleed into your head. Kind of. That's probably the simplest way to say it.
I thought it probably had something to do with the brain.
The other thing that you have, there's an area of cerebrovascular disease that is sort of, it's very common, by the way, probably 70% of the CTs you'd see or MRs that you'd see in people 65, 70 would have them. But there's a lot of what called vascular changes, microscopic vascular changes that change things on the MR that you can see. That's from a microvascular pseudovascular disease. That's very common, and people walk around every day. And there's some issues for it, but they don't really have much.
They don't
problems
really
from
know
it.
That.
Yeah, they won't even.
And
know
they're
have
functioning
it.
Okay.
Yeah, and they function well.
Doc, we had a listener call in, and he couldn't hang on the line here, but he wanted to know about unsweetened iced tea. Is there anything wrong with that?
Unsweetened iced tea. Tea has a lot of tannin, a lot of other things that are not good for it. Especially if you have kidney stones, I would not use a lot of tea.
How about green tea?
Green tea is an antioxidant tea. If you use a good green tea, you know, there's different kinds of
I find it just to be like a green scale of water, but it has
some antioxidant effects. The problem with green tea is that you don't know if you're getting good green tea or bad green tea. Well, what the concentration or the amount of antioxidants
is
in
exactly.
it. So that becomes difficult to say. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but that's where it's hard.
Next I have for you is nephritis.
Nephritis means that your kidneys are inflamed and your kidneys quit functioning properly, and essentially you either pee out different, you can't concentrate things, or you pee out different sodiums or different types of things.
I thought it
or
was you a, can I nef, what is it
nephritis
say? I thought it was a heavy metal band.
No.
Specitemia?
Oh, let me take a look. Septicemia.
Septicemia.
Yes.
What's that?
Septicemia.
That's number 11.
The comment is there. Yeah. Septicemia. What septicemia means is that you have an infection in your that has gotten out of control, has got in your bloodstream, and goes around your bloodstream. By the way, it can kill you, by the way.
It's the number 11. It's number 11 on the list of most dangerous.
Yeah.
The others I pretty much understand: liver disease, hypertension, Parkinson's, things like that. But I'll clue you, the audience, in on this article. It's up on my Facebook page. Like you said, handgun violence or gun violence, firearms violence, doesn't even crack the top 20 of the CDC's chief causes of death in the
world. It's amazing.
It really is. Dr. Jan Mensink from The Practice, I appreciate you being with us as always. Once again, folks, call The Practice, prepaid family medicine that makes a difference, at 871-3300. You can reach the doc at 871-3300. That's 871-3300. Doc, we'll talk to you again real soon.
Sounds good.
Think of The Practice like a doctor from 50 years ago. No long waits for appointments. 40% of our appointments are seen same day. No rushed appointments and access to phenomenal amount of discounts. We have the time to do good medicine. We're also focused on the emotional, the spiritual, dietary. All of those things feed in. We do more than most urgent cares do because we have the expertise, the skills, and the equipment to do it. We're able to do that top quality medicine, have that phenomenal access for less than a cup of coffee a day.
I joined The Practice for a number of reasons. One, I knew Jan Mensink for many years. He's a superb doctor, and I have appreciated his expertise in other areas. It's very affordable. Medications, he's worked out deals with pharmacies. One medication I get for free, it would cost me $300. What I like best about The Practice is the availability and accessibility. At times, I'm able to get in 2 or 3 hours. They deeply care about their patients here in an extraordinary way, which is unusual in today's modern medicine in most places.
My husband and I joined The Practice 3 years ago. We could not afford medical care at the time. Not long after we joined, my husband had a spider bite and he got very ill within a day. I was terrified that we were gonna have to put him in the hospital, which I knew we're looking at $40,000, $50,000. We brought him in and Dr. Mensink saved his life. We were able to come in here every day without any extra charges. I love Dr. Mensink. He's wonderful. And I will never ever forget how Dr. Mensink was with us.
My family and I have been members of The Practice for the past 2 years. I joined The Practice because I wanted to find a place where my family could be treated without taking a lot of time. But what we like about The Practice is that if our kids are sick or we're sick, we need medical attention, they'll take us usually the same day. They treat you very well. It's not very expensive. It's affordable. I like that The Practice is always there for us. Nos unimos con The Practice para que nuestra familia tenga muy buenos, eficaces doctores. Nos gusta mucho porque si uno de mis hijos está enfermo, nos meten de forma inmediata, por lo general el mismo día.
Lo que más me gusta de Practice es que hablan mi idioma.
Es un plan muy económico y que atienden a uno muy bien. Lo que más me gusta de The Practice es que siempre están ahí para mi familia.
Cuando llegué a la oficina y vi al doctor Menzi, yo llegué y me sentía débil, muy débil. Yo había visto muchos doctores y no me arreglaban el problema. Pero cuando llegué aquí al doctor Menzi, él me hizo un chequeo, un examen completo y encontró el problema y me ayudó, me dio el tratamiento que necesitaba. Y ahora me siento con mucha energía y estoy muy contento aquí. Él es un excelente doctor. Estoy seguro que les dará ayuda tal como lo hizo conmigo.